Hello and welcome to Theatre Voice's annual end of year special, in which we choose our highlights and lowlights for 2012 and the shows we're most looking forward to in 2013 as well. I'm joined by our regular panellists Matt Wolfe of the International Herald Tribune, David Benedict of Variety and Kate Bassett of The Independent on Sunday to make our choices. Let's start with Best Play. David.
Hands down winner for Carol Churchill's Love and Information, which was riveting from start to finish, unbelievably funny, and I think very profound, a game-changing play, and in a magisterial production by James MacDonald. And it was simply dazzling. One of the things I loved about it was there was a man sitting next to me who was clearly something to do with funding, or and he looked like a wealthy man that was there, you know, out of duty, and for the first 10 minutes you could see him sort of shifting in his seat going, oh, I don't really like this, you know, the play is something like 60 snapshot scenes, they don't make a logical, coherent sense, but they build, and he was having none of it. This was really, you know, it was out of the goodness of his heart that he was here, and then he began to get it, and then he began to find it really quite amusing, and by the end he was loving it, and I just thought, this is really indicative of the fact that this is experimental, but it carries its audience with it. It takes you somewhere you've never been in the theatre, and from anyone, that's an exciting thing. From a 74-year-old dramatist, persistently underrated, I may say, by most critics, I thought it was a dazzling evening, and I remember so much about it. It's a really great piece of work.
Matt, your choice.
I love Love and Information as well, and I'll return to the World Court later in this, but I would vote for The Effect because it had several effects on me. One was that it reversed my opinion of Lucy Prebble, who I thought had been terribly overrated for her previous play, Enron, which I didn't think was actually much cop. And also, even during it, The Effect, that is, I thought, I'm not really sure about this. And then something happened. It's that strange alchemy that happens in theater, which is why theater is an inexact science. When all of a sudden there was a force field of feeling that just took me over and swept me up straight through to the very end. It's fantastical, it's at moments incredibly bleak, it ultimately, I think, is quite buoyant, and I was deeply moved by it.
Kate, your play of the year.
Yeah, I also really thought Love and Information was excellent. Mine was actually, my choice was a smaller, perhaps more modest chamber play, Constellations, but also a Royal Court production. It was Nick Payne's two-hander with Rose Spall and Sally Hawkins playing. It was essentially, it's a two-hander, a romance, it's a two slightly unlikely people meet, a sort of earthy beekeeper and a theoretical physicist. But then what happens is the play starts to fragment and it plays out different possibilities of how that relationship might go, tragic, comic, good, bad. And she is a theoretical physicist, so it's actually sort of about parallel universes in a way and what possibilities could have been. And it's, I mean, there are plenty of plays that inject themselves with science and sort of boost themselves with that. You know, you put in some interesting scientific theories and the audience feels a bit flattered by that. But I think this was a bit like Arcadia, a very successful combination of those two in that it was interesting and stimulating and you learnt a bit about science, but it was also actually as a human drama, charming and funny and very poignant. So I loved it, though I didn't see it transferred to the West End, so I don't know if it lost anything in a larger space or anything like that.
My choice is also a two-hander, Duncan Macmillan's Lungs, a really woundingly intense two-hander about a couple facing the decision of whether to parent and pulled apart by the woman's subsequent miscarriage. I thought it was the most beautiful, quietly devastating evening of the year, produced by Payne's Plough as part of their touring production season. They brought it to Shoreditch Town Hall in a sort of purpose-built auditorium in the round, which was, it was absolutely beautiful and really special, a really small private play that had a huge reach. I absolutely adored it. On to musicals. So let's talk about Merrily Roll Along, your choice, Matt and Kate.
Well, first of all, it was a incredibly grim year for musicals, so the competition here was basically Sondheim versus Sondheim, Merrily We Roll Along versus Sweeney Todd, and actually I could have flipped a coin and it might have gone to Sweeney Todd, although I think in the end Sweeney Todd is such an acknowledged masterpiece that I went with Merrily because it's a flawed gem. It always was and always will be, and I think that Maria Friedman polished it to a very, very fine sheen. It had has a wonderful cast, and you know, it again does what the British theatre is so good at, which takes discards from the American repertoire and resurrect them.
I very much enjoyed Merrily We Roll Along, and partly because I thought that it was a terrific directorial debut by Maria Friedman, who's, you know, singer turned director in this instance. Technically polished and lots of lovely naturalistic detail in the acting. So a musical with unusually good and sincere and convincing acting. I also just enjoyed the musical itself in its balance of sentiment with satirical digs at the sort of toshy end of the entertainment industry. You know, it's about a composer who's gone from Broadway to becoming a producer of blockbuster Hollywood films. So I enjoyed it on both levels as a strong production and an enjoyable piece revived.
And Dave, for you, Sweeney Todd.
For me, it was Sweeney Todd. Yes, I mean, Sweeney Todd, of course, is the acknowledged Sondheim masterpiece. I've seen more Sweeney Todds than is probably healthy for a person, and had to be persuaded quite heavily to go down to Chichester to see it again. And I went to, I think, the last matinee and was knocked out. I then saw the dress run in London and the opening night in London, and I was completely blown away by it. There was one very weak piece of casting and one not very good piece of casting, which I won't bother singling out, but Imelda Staunton and Michael Ball were dazzling. It was the best lighting I'd seen from Mark Henderson in a very long time. And Peter Policarpo was sensational as the Beatle. It was like watching Fred and Rosemary West, the musical. I'm not being overstating here. And it just had a huge power. If there was one thing about it that I admired above all else, it was Imelda Staunton's performance. People, you know, you can usually walk away with Sweeney Todd if you're clever as a performer playing Mrs. Lovett, but what she did was truly remarkable. You never ever felt like she was doing a lyric. She played every single line like an acting line, and she separated out every single thought, so you knew exactly what was going on. I found it upsetting in a way that I've not felt before. I thought it was a dazzling piece of work by Jonathan Kent, and it was a really marvellous night in the theatre.
Of course, I'm also confirmed Sondheimite, but my musical of the year is Floyd Collins, the Adam Gettle musical that was revived at Southwark Playhouse. I thought it was a really stupendous production, directed by Derek Bond. Southwark Playhouse's second space, which they're now vacating, of course, the vault, actually was very cave-like and very chilly. I mean, freezing. I think each time I saw it three times. I had to wear a coat through the whole thing. But it was spellbinding, and Glenn Carter, as the guy in the cave who gets stuck in the cave, gave the most shattering musical performance, I think, of the year for me. Interestingly, Adam Gettle, the composer, who's very much, of course, influenced and a protege of Sondheim's, came to London last year as well, to the Hippodrome for a cabaret night. That was in one of my other favourite musical nights of the year. I thought that the Hippodrome cabaret room is a beautiful, beautiful room, it was such a rarefied choice for them to put on something like Adam Gettle, who hardly anybody knows, but his music is kind of extraordinary. Floyd Collins and particularly Life in the Piazza are two modern masterpieces. And so the combination of Floyd Collins and Adam Gettle are my best in musicals of the year. Moving on to Best Actor. Matt, your Best Actor.
Well, given, you know, that thing that acting should really be a celebration of being, lots of candidates, but I would single out Dominic West in The River. This was the Jez Butterworth play that was keenly anticipated because, you know, what do you possibly do for an encore after Jerusalem, which is this big, rangy, extravagant epic, and kind of loud and angry and fiery. And so what Jez Butterworth does very brilliantly is a very quiet, soft, subtle, poetic play that is itself a kind of river in terms of its emotional and linguistic intricacy. And Dominic West just gave one of those performances, a little bit like Rylance in Jerusalem, but coming at it from another vantage point, where you cannot imagine the play without him. He is, you know, this guy who's living in a remote cabin, who seems to have one or perhaps several girls in his orbit. He's a new man. He's very kind of linguistically aware, obviously very bright, but he's also very good with his hands. He bakes a mean fish, as we discover, because he does it during the play. And then he turns out to be not at all what you think he is by the time it's over, and your entire view of him and the play have changed, and I thought it was stunning.
And he, of course, is currently playing Henry Higgins in Sheffield in My Fair Lady, a complete change there. My actor of the year was Rupert Everett in The Judas Kiss. Again, not an actor I've usually liked, actually. I find him very excessively mannered in most things he does. I suppose playing Oscar Wilde was a perfect fit, given that. But I thought he was really moving and really invested in the part. It actually made change my view of this play. I wasn't a huge fan of this play either, and actually was really moved by it. It was one of my plays of the year. David, your actor of the year.
I actually didn't think it was a terribly good year for leading act performances. I do think Dominic West was sensational, however. So I sort of went through the year going, I'm seeing good work by people, but nothing that would, I would immediately put on the list. And then I went to the print room and I saw a play by Will Eno called Tom Paine and John Light. It's a solo show. John Light played it. It was the most dazzling piece of acting I saw all year, and possibly for several years. He was just so relaxed that you never knew what he was going to do. There was tons of audience address, and he just eyeballed the audience and was very, very calm and very, very quiet, and would suddenly be electrifyingly angry, but not in a kind of look at me, I'm showing how angry I can be, I can turn on a dime. It was absolutely dazzling piece about the hurt of a relationship that has broken up, about the way you perform in life in order to keep going. And it was a really truthful, technically absolutely marvellous performance that really, really dazzled.
And Kate?
I thought it was an awful lot of really good acting in the year, actually. I thought Dominic West was great. I thought Ian Glen also at the print room was a really good, funny and furious Uncle Vanya. Ben Chaplin in Farewell to Theatre, Joseph Paterson and Julius Caesar. But I'm actually going for Toby Stevens in Private Lives at Chichester, partly like Mark, because I haven't always liked him, and I sometimes find him self-conscious and mannered. And he was playing Elliot in Private Lives. And so you would think, well, he can do sort of the suave, handsome thing incredibly easily, which indeed he can. And he starts off with that, but then under that, what's interesting in that production was that he had this kind of gnawing melancholia, you know, when he's marrying his new bride, and supposedly it should be a romantic comedy, but he's about to meet his old flame. When he does, he had this moment of extraordinary kind of emotional tenderness. It was as if all his suave, witty air had gone away, and you had sort of this kind of underbelly of vulnerability. And then what was so really brilliant about the production was Anna Chancellor was playing his old flame Amanda. And once they run away and they're hidden away in her flat in Paris, a fantastic relaxed naturalism of lying around snogging on chaise longue. And it was just very beautifully, I've rarely seen a real sexual and jokey relationship played that well and that convincingly on stage.
Especially for a play that's so familiar.
Yeah, no, they did that really well.
On to Best Actress, I think Anna Chancellor is your best
actress. Yes, she is. I mean, I thought she was dazzling in both roles, in the transfer of South Downs and the Browning version, playing sort of two sides of the same coin, being very, very hard in the Browning version, and actually being wryly amused by problems with her son and her son's friend in David Hare's play. But I've long admired Anna Chancellor, but I was absolutely not prepared for quite how good she was in Private Lives. When I was really, really young, I saw Maggie Smith, and I can't remember anything about it because I was so young. And I've seen many an Amanda since, but I was on the edge of my seat. You never knew how she was going to do a line. She was doing, she was sort of, sometimes she would signal her amusement. Sometimes, it was like watching a championship tennis player, and you with every shot choice at her disposal. So you never knew what she was going to do with a line. Even as Mark says, a play that I and lots of other people know very well, where you go, oh, here's this famous bit of dialogue, so I know what the next line is. You didn't know where she was going to place it.
I'm really surprised it didn't transfer to the West End.
It will come later this year. Right, I think it's a really, really major performance. And also, it's been a great year for her because she was far and away the best thing in both series of The Hour on TV.
Matt and Kate, you both chose Hattie Morahan, but in different productions. Mm. Matt?
Hattie Morahan, for me, in A Doll's House, although I did admire her hugely at the Almeida as well. All these canonical roles come around again and again. I think for those of us who did see Janet McTeer in A Doll's House in 1997-98, you thought, well, it's never going to be done that well again. And in fact, when I went to the Young Vic over the summer to see this, I thought it has been done as well, but in a totally different way. Hattie is very different from Janet McTeer. She's much softer, much gentler. And she had this rather extraordinary capacity, which is very rare, to seem surprised by the play as she was acting it, which is rather wonderful because we know how it ends. We know that the door slams and Nora slams the door, but she doesn't know because she doesn't know what's going to happen to her. And it gave a kind of emotional pulse to it, which was actually kind of exhausting, but also rather extraordinary. I also thought it was a brilliant production overall, but she shone at the center of it.
And Kate, your choice of Hattie Morahan was for her other performance.
My favourite Hattie Morahan performance was in The Dark Earth and the Light Sky, which is Nick Dear's biodrama about Edward Thomas, the poet who died in World War I. Though strangely, it felt to me like a biodrama about Edward Thomas's wife, because Hattie Morahan was so beautifully complex in it. It was a fantastic production of a very strong play, actually, by Richard Eyre, and everyone was wonderful in it, almost. But I think what I really enjoyed about was her complexity. She did these very fluid switches between stepping out and doing monologues, remembering the marriage, and going into scenes and actually playing those moments. She also had this great arc where essentially she was valiantly devoted to him. He was incredibly difficult. And she was, there's a kind of fierce lovingness about her performance. And yet she's sort of sweet as well, a little bit wild and vulnerable, and actually in many ways bullied by him. And yet has this toughness actually about her, in that she stands by him with a kind of resilience that's really impressive. And then her arc is that he is a bit depressive and actually on the edge of losing it sometimes. But actually her arc is, after he's died, that she also loses it and has a breakdown. And so finally she's quite rocky and edgy and broken. And it was just she's just a fantastic classical actress, really.
Absolutely. It's wonderful to see an actress like Hattie Morahan going through the ranks and now finally sort of feels like she's emerging to stardom. My actress of the year is actually somebody who's already an established star, Cate Blanchett, who came to the Barbican in Sydney Theatre Company's production of Big and Small, which was an extraordinary performance in a rather weird play. But then I also saw Cate Blanchett appear in Uncle Vanya, again Sydney Theatre Company, when he went to New York. To New York City Centre, and she is just, I mean, she was until now the artistic director with her husband of Sydney Theatre Company, but she's a really, really fantastic and interesting actress who is completely watchable at every single moment. I think she's one of the great stage actresses. She's right up there with Meryl Streep for me. On to Best Director. Start with you, Matt.
fantastic year, I think, for women directors, Carrie Cracknell, A Doll's House, but wanting to spread the wealth around, I was really, really impressed by Polly Finlay's direction of Antigone at the National and the Olivier. This is a play that can be, it can feel like homework, it can be a bit dusty, and this was a quasi-modernized, not entirely, but largely modernized production of a play that turned out to be a ferocious critique of conviction politics in an election year in America in which conviction politics threatened to swamp all discourse. Christopher Eccleston's astonishing performance as Creon began to seem like a companion in a strange way to George W. Bush and his political kin. And I just thought it was a really rich, robust, very moving production, and it put Polly Finlay on the largest national theater stage.
Kate?
I would give it to Gregory Doran for a brilliant concept with Julius Caesar, in that he fitted the play to a post-colonial African setting. But actually, I want to give it to Sean Holmes at the Lyric Hammersmith for doing several really good productions in the year, one of which was Mourning by Simon Stevens, and then also a sort of brilliantly witty experimental Midsummer Night's Dream with Filter, where it was done in a scruffy basement nightclub with microphones, and the Mechanicals were a group who were putting on a show that night, a sort of deceptively geeky rock band. And it was sort of rocking and tongue-in-cheek, but also magical, and actually textually really insightful. The lines made sense. And Puck was a particularly brilliant sort of beer-swigging stage manager who would have conversations with sort of invisible fairies, which were electronic whizzing noises in surround sound around the auditorium, and that was wonderful. And he also did a really strong, I thought, Desire Under the Elms, which is Eugene O'Neill's Farmstead tragedy, with another excellent actress, Denise Goff, playing the young woman who's married an older man and has an affair with his son. And there were these electrifying sexual scenes where they've resisted each other for ages, and then they get together, and the set by Ian McNeil had this that you'd see them, it was an open plan, so you could see both rooms and you could see them darting between. It was like a kind of spinning jigsaw of chambers. And I thought that was extremely strong as well. So it's for his overall year, yeah.
David. Without wishing to sound like a stuck record, James McDonald for London Information. People often, outside the theatre, often go, well, what is a director actually does, and it's quite a difficult thing to say. You know, sometimes you're like a conductor of an orchestra. You're balancing all the instruments and producing the sound and the interpretation. In this case, Love and Information is a series of scenes. There are no listed characters. There's merely a dash before a line of dialogue, and then a dash before another line of dialogue. So therefore, no two productions of this play will ever be the same. There's no stipulation as to location, speed, rhythm, anything. So what the director does, absolutely in this case, is you are a collaborator with Carol Churchill's text, and the range that he produced, the ideas that he put onto that stage, all of which were whisked away. Some scenes lasted 20 seconds. Some, I think the longest was about 3 minutes. And they were whisked on and off of Miriam Butta's set, brilliantly lit by Peter Mumford. And it was an amazingly complete piece of work, which absolutely held its audience. Sometimes a director is merely about making taste calls, but this was all of that. He had the taste to cast 16 extraordinarily varied and very strong actors. He got an absolute ensemble out of them. It was really, really first-rate work.
And my director of the year is, again, like yours, something I've already acknowledged here, Floyd Collins, directed by Derek Bond, a young director who's yet to make his mark, really, but he did something so unique and brilliant with Floyd Collins, making it into a sort of site-specific piece. It was really, really detailed and rich and evocative, and made a quite difficult show really, really, really moving. On to highlights of the year. David.
Again, a repeat, A Doll's House. I went with an actor And she and I turned to each other at the end of the first half, breathless with excitement. You know, it's what you want. You go and see her and you go, I know A Doll's House, I know what happens, and it made me forget. You know, Simon Stevens' adaptation of the text was not radical. It was good, but it was not radical. It had a fantastic set by Ian McNeil, which whirled round and round and gave you every perspective on the house. But it made me forget how the play worked. I was desperate for the interval to end so that I could get back into the play and see what happened next, which a play as famous and as well known as Doll's House was amazing. The whole thing, the beautiful, beautiful supporting performances that were just pitched perfectly. We've already mentioned Hattie Morahan, but just actually the way in which you believed that community of people, the way you believed the blackmailing, because all the characters made sense in relation to one another. This was a show in which nothing stood out because it was all part of a whole. I'm thrilled that it's coming back to the Young Vic early this year. Do not miss it.
Matt?
Well, you know, the phrase once in a lifetime is bandied around a lot, but my highlight of the year was literally once in a lifetime, because this will never happen again, which was the sequence of 37 Shakespeare plays in as many languages at Shakespeare's Globe. Now, I didn't see all 37, I don't know many people who did, but I did see 9 of them, and it was absolutely extraordinary on every level. You think, well, conceptually, what does this mean? It's just a kind of gimmick, and then actually you go and you see them, and you think, well, first of all, there's the organizational finesse to bring 37 companies from around the world. I know how hard it is to bring 12 American students from New York to London. This is 37 companies from around the world, including places like South Sudan and Afghanistan and, you know, all sorts of former Baltic states and whatnot, to Shakespeare's Globe for, in most cases, maximum 3 performances, usually 2. And, of course, it proved as well that Shakespeare belongs to the world, because as soon as you saw these disparate plays refracted through these disparate cultures, I mean, to see the Comedy of Errors performed by a company from Kabul, for whom this isn't just a night at the theater, this is, you know, an exercise in healing, was absolutely transfixing. If I had 2012 to do over again, I would have gone on holiday and seen all 37.
Kate?
Yeah, as a globe to globe, you've got a huge highlight of the year. But I went for a farewell to the theatre at Hampstead, which is Richard Nelson's biodrama about the actor, manager and writer Harley Granville Barker. I just loved this because it was so quiet and understated. You know, you'd expect a biodrama to deal with, you know, the highlight of his life in London. But actually what it did was it moved right to the side and followed him to when he was sort of out on a limb in America and a bit lost and not knowing what to do at a drama school in provincial America. And really what it turned out to be was a group, almost like a Chekhovian group portrait. And I loved the way that Roger Michell's production was very low-lit, very quiet. It was very talky. You know, certain people would have absolutely hated it, but I loved it. And Ben Chaplin's Granville Barker was wonderfully understated as well. So it had this sort of dapper, slightly humorous, dry wit, but actually under it you knew he was completely lost.
Can I just second everything you just
can
said?
Can I third it? And I also say I think that was the most grossly underrated.
I was about to say the same thing. I think its problem was is that everybody thought, well, not everybody, but a lot of people thought they were going to see a Harley Granville Barker bio play. So it was then reviewed as a failed biodrama, and it was nothing of the sort. It wasn't trying to be a biodrama. And there was one moment for me, which was a scene at night, beautifully lit by Rick Fisher, with just faces in the dark between Gemma Redgrave and Ben Chaplin, who I confess I have completely underrated. I had no idea he could be that good. It was mesmerising. It was an absolute piece of Chekhovian writing, as Kate says. It was a dazzling thing.
My highlight of the year was the launch of Michael Grandage's company in the West End. The West End is often deemed to be in a sort of creative crisis, and we hardly see any new plays in the West End, and lots of okay revivals. But this is actually an attempt to finally impose some kind of structure and some kind of sense to the West End, just as Michael Brandage became a brand name at the Donmar, where you would buy the season based on his name. So he is now in the West End with the same sort of ethos as the Donmar, big stars, guarantee of quality, and indeed even the £10 seat initiative, which is a very powerful message to the West End as well. On the one hand, they are doing premium prices that will go up to £85, which is what the rest of the West End does too, but on the other hand, they are making it genuinely accessible at £10, which is, just as the National does with its £12 season, is a sign that you can get to the West End cheaper, more cheaply. On to lowlights. Start with you, Matt.
Well, unlike some of my colleagues in the critical community, I genuinely love musicals. I actually like them. I don't just tolerate them until the next production of Hamlet comes along. And so for the year to end with two absolute flat-out musical duds, and I'm referring to the back-to-back double whammy of The Bodyguard and Viva Forever, it's as if the West End is sending out the message, not to the critics, who cares about the critics, but to the public, we don't give a toss about you or your taste. We treat you with contempt, and we think you're so stupid that you will come and sup at whatever trough we put in your direction. And these are both craven, cynical, ill-thought-out, badly produced, cheaply directed shows, and they really do the art form a disservice.
I think you could say the same about my lowlight of the year, which was Zach Braff's All That People, which was a dire, dire play that came from New York, actually. Zach Braff didn't do it in New York, but he did do it here, and it was just a case of having his name on the billing and getting people in on the basis of that. It was just terrible. The other lowlight for me, but actually was in a sense a highlight as well, was seeing Bianca Jagger taking flash photography throughout Einstein on the Beach at the Barbican in the auditorium. I confronted her afterwards. That's when it became a highlight of the year, because I had no idea who I was confronting, but I wanted to tell this person off who was taking flash photography throughout the show. I screamed at her, "Who do you think you are, summoning my best Patti LuPone?" And subsequently was told it was Bianca Jagger. I then wrote about it, and it made front page news in many papers. So it was very satisfying on the other hand, but it was actually a really low point that she's famous meant news. It should have been dealt with by the theatre, who I think let the side down very badly in a 5-hour performance when they had every opportunity to go in and stop it. They chose not to because they knew who it was. Your low light.
Not unconnected. People getting away with murder. There was some really astonishingly bad direction from people who should know better. Declan Donlan did far and away the worst production of Tis Pity, She's a Whore it's ever been my misfortune to sit through. Tim Carroll was responsible for two of the worst Shakespeare revivals I can think of in a long time. That vastly, vastly overrated Twelfth Night and Richard III, both of which were astonishingly poor productions, made up for by overacting to the nth degree by Mark Rylance. We've got, "Oh, Mark Rylance, he's so watchable." Yes, he is. Was anybody moved by that Twelfth Night? I very much doubt it. Did we laugh a lot at his Olivia antics? Yes, he's doing great clowning. He has no respect for anybody else on that stage. And similarly, Rich III is an incredible solo show. Unfortunately, it's attached to a perfectly standard production, which makes no sense given the kind of performance that he's given. And for that, we have to blame the director. Similarly, Lindsay Posner's Uncle Vanya was just... he directed the text but forgot to direct the subtext, so there were a lot of actors left stranded. I felt very sorry for that cast. And Thea Sharrock's work on The Bodyguard was lamentable. You know, she, I just think it's irresponsible to charge people a lot of money for work that poor.
Kate, I think your lowlight is also directorial.
Yes, it was in that he both devised and directed it with someone else. It was Forests by Calixto Bieto, which was part of the World Shakespeare Festival, and of course Globe to Globe was part of that as well. But you know, you win some, you lose some. This was, I thought it sounded really interesting. It was going to be a combination of scenes from Shakespeare plays about forests, and that's a really interesting theme, actually. You know, it's a running theme through the plays, sylvan scenes where people go into dreamlike worlds, alternative existences, or go mad into this kind of savage terrain of woodland. But what it was pretentious, and I mean, it was actually literally nonsense. It was an art installation style white box set with a leafless tree and black polythene. And not far in, we got into Calixto Bieto's, you know, bad boy, enfant terrible terrain of S&M sex. So, you know, women actresses are being sellotaped to walls and their knickers are ripped off and another one, her head's bound in cling film. Meanwhile, the text is not really extracts from woodland scenes. He doesn't seem to know the difference between scenes about woods, heaths, battlefields, meadows. You're thinking, it's not really even about forests.
He did actually do a very good Carmen at ENO, though.
Yes, he's done good work, but this was an absolute stinker.
On to special awards. This is something that isn't covered by the previous categories. Let's start with you, Matt.
Well, I'm going to give it to a theatre, which is the Royal Court, for reasons that have already come up in this discussion. I mean, the Royal Court's had, you know, wonderful work before, but there was something about it in 2012 where every single thing I saw there was rewarding to some degree or other. I mean, I'm not saying that everything was as formally audacious as Love and Information or as much of a rediscovery of a voice as Terrell Alvin McCraney's Choir Boy, or, you know, as sort of searchingly intimate as Jez Butterworth's The River. But everything I saw there across the year, from Constellations at the beginning to In the Republic of Happiness at the end, was to some degree interesting, fascinating, beautifully acted, wonderfully directed. And it just is so exciting in a theatre culture here, inevitably given over to, you know, trotting out the classics on a sort of endless travelator, to see such a rich, diverse array of exciting new work.
David? I would second what Matt said, but I would actually give it to a production, which was The Curious Incident of the Dog of the Nighttime. I think the second half isn't quite as good as the first, but my God, the first half is an unbelievable mix of Simon Stevens's adaptation, which never felt like an adaptation, it felt like a piece of theatre. Fantastic lighting by Paulie Constable. Every element of this, the design by Bunny Christie, the acting by Luke Treadaway, Eunice Dubs, the whole cast, all under the aegis of Marianne Elliott, who basically hasn't put a foot wrong for as long as I can remember. I mean, she really is a major, major talent. And it was just so exciting to be in that auditorium where you didn't know what was going to happen next, but you felt in completely safe hands, and that it was absolutely reinventing a text and making it theatrical.
As for me, we haven't mentioned the Olympics here yet. My award goes to the Olympics for seeing off Blood Brothers in Chicago after 24 years and 15 years respectively. Not that I have anything against either of those shows, because I thought they both had their place in their day. But I do think that it's a real problem with the real estate of the West End when long runners just hog theatres forever. And I thought it was a really worrying thing when Chicago moved to the Garrick, because it's the smallest house out of the three it has played in. I thought, well, they'd be stuck there for infinity, and we'll never have that house available again. In fact, the Olympics saw it off, so that was actually a really good thing. Likewise, the Phoenix. I mean, it's great that we've got the Phoenix back after 24 years. And Kate?
Yeah, I'm going slightly out on a limb here, because I would have given it to Globe to Globe, but I knew that would have been covered already. So I just thought I would mention Lawrence Boswell's artistic directorship in Bath at the Ustinov Studio, which is a tiny venue. But he's just... I mean, he's particularly strong on bringing American premieres that we've not seen and are actually really worth a look. And I'm often surprised that they've not made it to a London theatre. One I saw that was very strong was called In the Next Room, or The Vibrator Play, which was actually a sort of domestic drama about the early development of psychoanalysis. It was comic, was about vibrators, but was also a rather beautiful little domestic drama about a small town provincial shrink and his wife and their marriage falling apart. But also this coming year he's got David Grindley directing a new American play, The American Plan, and an Obie winning play called 4,000 Miles, which is actually coming to London afterwards, but he is premiering it, and I think that's, you know, I think we should celebrate that.
You mentioned looking out to this year. Is there anything else you're looking forward to this year?
Yes, I am looking forward to, I would say, the obvious one is Robert Lepage's Playing Cards. It's part one of a four-parter, so this one's called Playing Cards, One Spades. And I, you know, sometimes he has an off day, but I think he might be back on top form with this. So it's, I gather, a spectacular kind of epic piece where he, I think it's Las Vegas. So it's about people going down the slippery slope of Las Vegas, Sin City, possibly mirroring American soldiers who are training to go and fight battles against the supposed baddies of the in Iraq.
Las Vegas, where he's represented by the Cirque du Soleil Sheikh Ha. David, what are you looking forward to this year?
I'm looking forward to, I'm crossing my fingers, a transfer for Daniel Evans's production of My Fair Lady, which is dazzlingly good and at least 20 times better than Trevor Nunn production. Great in every department, and discovery of things like Dominic West in a musical, Alistair David's choreography, Paul Will's design. It's a very, very complete piece of work. It's really exciting. But really, I'm looking forward to lots more good acting in non-lead roles. That's the great thing, as lots of people comment about coming to London, as outsiders come to London and see amazing quality of acting. And Tim McInerney won't win any awards, but he was amazingly strong in Scenes from an Execution in a very unshowy way. John Marquez in Privates on Parade, Anthony Carf in Private Lives, Martina Laird in Moon on Rainbow Shore, Sarah Kestelman, both at the Donmar and in a rather rickety production of Torch Song Trilogy at the Menier Chocolate Factory, two completely different performances, as if from two different actors, just quietly very, very good, and also Catherine Parkinson in Absent Friends, just a wonderful performance that again seemed to grow and grow and grow in front of your eyes. There's a wealth of talent on British stages which needs celebrating.
The thing I'm looking forward to, we've mentioned the paucity of new musicals last year, and I'm really, really looking forward to Once coming from Broadway, one of my favourite musicals of the moment. We've also got the Book of Mormon coming here, but I think this is the sleeper hit of the two. Book of Mormon won the Tony Award for Best Musical in 2011, Once won this last year, 2012. And of course, what's interesting is it's a sort of homecoming of sorts, because virtually the entire creative team is Anglo-Irish. From director John Tiffany, book writer Enda Walsh, designer Bob Crowley, orchestrator Martin Lowe, all of whom got Tony Awards, and also choreographer Stephen Hoggett. It's a really beautiful, very, very quietly understated piece of work, I think. It's very un-Broadway, and it's an absolutely beautiful musical. I can't wait to see it again. I haven't heard about casting yet. I'm dying to see what they do, because the guy in New York, Steve Kazee, was absolutely brilliant. So that's the one I'm most looking forward to this year. And Matt?
It's totally on Broadway, you're absolutely right, and I still can't believe it. I'm thrilled that it is, but I can't believe it's a hit on Broadway, because it breaks all the rules, and yet it's playing to 101%. But the level of acting in this country, as David has already indicated, is just extraordinary, and you know, every so often a production comes along, and you look at the cast and you go, that cast sounds just about perfect. And so with that in mind, and also because it's opening imminently, I'm really looking forward to seeing what Ian Rickson does with Harold Pinter's Old Times. It's a play I absolutely love. I think the emergence of Kristin Scott Thomas from sort of screen siren to shattering theater actress is kind of without parallel. I mean, there are lots of theater people who become film stars like Meryl Streep, but Kristin Scott Thomas didn't begin on the London stage. She began as a movie star. So it's quite amazing that she's as breathtaking an actress as she is. She is perfect casting for either of the two women in the play, and I gather she'll get to play both of them. But she's got a fantastic duo with her, the sublime Leah Williams, whose performance in David Harris Skelet is one of my Desert Island performances, and Rufus Sewell, who's just bloody wonderful. So it should be great.
And we'll be here reviewing all of those later this year. Thank you, David, Matt, and Kate.